democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Hermit Sheikh, Robbie Karen, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud. I'm Amy Goodman with special thanks to Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, David Prude, Ariel Boone, John Randolph, Kieran Krugmeadows, and Charina Ndura. Go to democracynow.org for transcripts, video, and audio podcasts. Thanks so much for joining us.
Step through the global window, alternating Thursday evenings for a trip around the world through the FM ethers of WUSB 90.1 FM. I'm Chris, and I'll be your host on the Global Rhythms program every other Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Tune in and expand your musical horizons on Global Rhythms on WUSB Stony Brook.
Come listen to our radio show.
Mixtape Radio, every Wednesday night at midnight.
Until 3 a.m. Thursday morning.
Featuring the newest and the best in indie, alternative, and experimental music.
With your hosts, Jeff.
And Christine.
So tune in. It's really gonna go.
You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It is 6:01 p.m. That means it's time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, joined by Emmanuel.
Emmanuel joined by Kyle. And yeah, what a week. What an awful week. Or actually, it hasn't even been a week. The attacks came on Friday in Paris. And it's Tuesday now, so it's really only been about 4 days.
Yeah, I think you're right. Your math is right, yeah.
I'll tell you, though, you know, I'm learning a lot about people, about attitudes, about ignorance, fear, courage, all that. I can't say I'm surprised. This happens every time we go through something like this. For those of you in a coma, for those of you who are listening in the future that have no idea what we're talking about the massive terrorist attack that took place in the streets of Paris on Friday evening, where last count, I believe, 129 people were killed in, what was it, six different attacks? Six, seven, I'm not really
six
sure.
Six or seven, yeah, locations.
In cafes, outside stadium, in a theater. Awful stuff. And there's really no words you can use to describe something like this, even though CNN will try forever. There's just, you know, we were watching, as always, we watch Euronews, and I think their coverage, it might have seemed unorganized and kind of crazy, but that's what the situation was, and I think it reflected it. They weren't trying to fill every minute, every moment with some kind of description or words. Sometimes you just heard somebody not saying anything or typing on a keyboard, or you just maybe saw something that you didn't understand. That's because we were all trying to come to grips with what was going on. And sometimes you need to see that unfold to get the real story. And I'm glad we saw that. Very little in the way of judgment and fear-mongering, just kind of shock, sadness, the feelings that you would actually feel being there. And already it's begun, though. Already it's begun here, especially in this country. You know, this country, of all the countries, I think, has the least right to be passing judgment and saying all the ignorant things that I'm seeing. Right now I'm looking at a map of all the governors in this country of ours that oppose Syrian refugees, as if that is the issue at all. You know, first of all, okay, this whole region destabilization is because of this country, because of George W. Bush, because of the things that we did.
Yes.
We as a country, not we as in the people here at WUSB or Stony Brook or anything like that. But you have, unfortunately, they do represent us. And that putting it very nicely, misadventure is very, very costly. I remember, probably those of you who are obsessed can track down a show that I said this back in our early days. This show came on the air in 2003, right after the invasion, the second Gulf War. Remember, there was the first one, 1990,
yeah.
Or not 91, actually.
I believe it was March 27th or February 27th, 25th.
Are you one of the obsessed that, you know, the exact date the show went on the air?
Well, you know, I was listening, and I remember the chronology because it was a pretty pivotal point in my life. I was going through a lot of changes, and I know where I was, so to speak, as is everybody in a lot of ways. So it is vivid in that sense, and I was paying attention to the actual dates, and I believe it was 25th or 27th of, I believe, February or March.
You know, what's funny is that this show premiered the same week that Real Time with Bill Maher also premiered. The same week.
Wow, that's
and
cool.
I, you know, I watched that program, and lots of times we covered the same ground. And, of course, there's a lot of controversy involving him, which I think we should get into at some point. Maybe today, maybe some other time. I just think it's kind of interesting that we've been around that long, 12 years now. But back then, at some point, I know I said, and maybe I even said it in a different radio program before this one, that the pigeons will come home to roost at some point. People who whose lives have been destroyed by our actions overseas are going to grow up, and they're going to be angry. And I even said, you know, if I was one of those people, I would be seeking revenge probably for the rest of my life.
And teaching it.
Absolutely. Now, the terrorists, this past incident on Friday, Did you look at their ages? Incredibly young.
26, 25.
Younger than that. 19,
oh,
20.
Really?
Yeah, it was,
wow,
it was really something. So do the math. You know, 12 years, these guys, they were 7 years old. 7 years old. So, you know, I'm not, these aren't necessarily people who are in Iraq or connected directly to what was going on with the U.S. invasion, but certainly indirectly, and certainly enough to see that the West is a threat, is evil. Whether or not that is actually true, that is the perception that people grow up with. And when these people do grow up, they're still angry. They have power to do things. They've learned a lot, and they have a very focused upon enemy. And that is what we are seeing. It's all related. It's all related to that one misstep that we all allowed to happen. And we all did allow it to happen. Anti-war protests weren't nearly big enough. The opposition in Congress was pitiful. We're all guilty of this. And now it's the flip side. And what we're seeing now is judgment from people in this country as if our hands are completely clean. You know, that where are these people coming from? Why do they hate us so much? You just have to look not even into history, just, you know, a few years ago to see how this all was set into motion and all the things we could have done in a much more intelligent way where none of this would have been happening or very little of it anyway. This level of hatred, there's a reason. There's a reason for something like this.
Yeah, I dare say that we don't understand. We don't really understand because we weren't on the other end of those choices, those decisions, that stuff raining down on young people. It's hard to fathom. And I think with these tragedies and so on, it's a reminder of what war is like,
mm-hmm,
really at people's doorstep. And
you know,
the characterizations now are, as you said, flying around, misstatements and exaggerations and so on.
That's a very, very good point, because I've heard that since the days of Reagan, I've heard we're at war in one place or another, whether it's Grenada or
drugs
all these different places that we have invaded in one way or another, or just been very involved in.
Right.
But we always use the phrase we're at war, but we don't know what war is. That is a very good point. We don't know what war war is. Two-way, you know? It's not just bombing people in one place and not having anything happen to you. It goes both ways, all right? So, yeah, if you're at war, expect your cities to blow up as well, because that's what war is. Don't use the term loosely. It's a very serious thing. And you know, we saw car bombs going off in Iraq and Baghdad constantly, you know, suicide bombers all the time. This wasn't happening under Saddam Hussein. Not a nice guy, but it wasn't happening under him. You can't deny that. We came into the picture. All of a sudden, it's a daily occurrence. And you know what? That's just the cost of war, the cost of freedom. It's unfortunate, but it's life. But, you know, you can't really say that when it comes to Paris. You can't really say, nah, it's unfortunate, but it's life. You say that, people realize what a stupid thing that is to say. They realize the cost of these things we've done.
Right. Yeah. And it's weighted. Like, we have veterans, of course, and who could tell us all kinds of things. But
mm-hmm,
but the way we kind of dehumanize the people and talk about their techniques and tactics as terror and stuff like that. Well, it's terrifying to be occupied and regime changes and such in history. So that's the kind of interesting thing I think that plays into a lot of the propaganda, a lot of the that fuels the characterizations from this side of the water, so to speak. So, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we're seeing all these governors saying that they don't want Syrian refugees in their state. What a bunch of ignorami. Is that the right way to say ignoramus in plural when there's so many of them.
Yes.
I'm looking at a map right now. Of course, it looks like all of the South is part of this. From Arizona to Florida, there's no state. Such a nice straight line. it doesn't include California, at least not yet. But I'm also seeing Kansas. I'm seeing Illinois, really? And Maine, New Hampshire. New Hampshire is the only Democratic governor who says that she does not want Syrian refugees in her state. I called her an agent of ISIS on Twitter yesterday. I did, and the reason I did that,
you did.
I don't care. The reason I did that was because this is exactly what ISIS wants. And first of all, okay, before we go any further. Can we make a new rule here, please?
New rule.
So many damn names for this group of people. They call themselves Islamic State. Overseas, they're known as ISIL. And Barack Obama is like the only U.S. politician that calls them ISIL. Everyone else calls them ISIS. But their real name is what?
Daesh. Yes.
I say we call them that from now on. The reason being, Islamic State... They're not a state, and they're certainly not Islamic. They don't represent either one. And
good point.
You ask people who are Islamic, you admire these guys, you follow these people.
Yeah.
And, you might find a couple that say yes, you might. But, of the billion Muslims in the world, I'll bet 99% will say vehemently, no, this is not who we are. More than 99%. Good God. So let's not feed into that. Yeah, Daesh probably means the same thing in Arabic.
I was just thinking that. But
at least we won't be saying it out loud and thinking this is an
Romanizing.
Islamic state.
We're because Romanizing, yes.
You look at the reaction around you, the hatred that, the previous program just outlined, a lot of the hatred against Muslims. And one thing I noticed, certainly by watching a variety of news feeds, was the immediate and strong condemnation of this act by many Muslims around the world, leaders, civilians, all kinds of people. So those of you who say that, why don't they do more? They're doing a lot. They're saying a lot. They're not militarily strong like we are, so they can't just snap their fingers and solve the problem. But they're plenty pissed, and they're speaking out. You might choose not to hear them. That might be the problem, the fact that it's not being reported enough. But believe me, there is outrage across the board. For God's sake, Hezbollah is fighting Daesh. Yeah, they are the people that we consider to be terrorists. They were elected in Lebanon. And I believe the Palestinian state or part of it, I'm not really entirely sure, but these are our enemies. Iran supports them, but they are the enemies of Daesh. I'll say for this show, Islamic State, ISIS, so that people get used to it. So you have people like that, but we won't ever acknowledge that. We won't ever say, yeah, you know, we think you're horrible people, but we're going to work with you on this to defeat these people, because no, we can't ever do that. We have Russia that wants to defeat them. We have the entire EU. We have the entire Arabic world, and everybody hates these people. Everybody does. They have united, or they could unite in a way that has never been done before. It's actually an opportunity. Just like 9/11 was an opportunity to unite the world against this kind of horror. And I think we're missing a lot of these opportunities by not talking to people that we have differences with, not working together to defeat something that I don't think anybody really wants, except for a few crazed fundamentalists. And that's the real problem, is fundamentalism. In any religion, fundamentalism has, throughout history, been the cause of all kinds of problems.
Yeah, yeah, makes for a divisive community, makes people take sides and not listen,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we're missing. We gotta have understanding and create that when we don't actively.
Yeah, absolutely.
Time and time and over again until we get it right. That's kind of what democracy is about.
Yeah.
So
if you hear this crap, I hope people speak out against it. Your voice does matter. I have to say, Kyle, I'm very proud of your state. Your state is one of the few that actually is welcoming refugees, Washington State. In addition to Colorado and Pennsylvania, that kind of surprised me, Vermont, Connecticut. I'm not sure why New York isn't listed in that particular map, because Governor Cuomo said some really intelligent things today. We have to protect Americans and not lose our soul as America in the process, right? He said during an event at Harvard University. The day America says close the gates, build the wall, then I say take down the Statue of Liberty because you've gone to a different place. He notes the poem on the Statue of Liberty states, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, so I won't let them win by conceding defeat of the American dream." Now, 28 governors so far have demanded that the federal government not place Syrian refugees in their states. First of all, they have no say. You know, if you're granted asylum in this country, you can live wherever you damn well please. They can't stop it. I want to take truckloads of Syrian refugees to these states, except it would be really bad for the Syrian refugees. I'd feel, I mean, who wants to live in Alabama?
Yeah, they're not good.
It's ridiculous. But to say that the Syrian refugees are there, have you seen Syrian refugees? Have you ever actually watched what's going on? There's so many good documentaries out. But you know what? Let's take a shortcut. Go to Google. Type Syrian refugees, put it in quotes so you make sure you get the right thing, and click images. And those are the people that these 28 governors are afraid of. And you'll see that something like 2% of them are men of fighting age, if that's really what you're concerned about. Most of them are families. Most of them are scared families who have been living exactly what we saw in Paris on Friday. They've been living this in their lands for years now. They've seen death like you have not even been able to imagine. And these are the people that you want to keep out of your country. These are the people you're afraid of. It makes no sense at all. And I just cannot believe this is gaining traction, that we're seeing this being reported like it makes any sense whatsoever. And here's another thing. If you look at the identities of the terrorists on Friday, they're all either French or Belgian citizens, for God's sake. Maybe one came from Syria, but that's not even certain yet, because the passport that was found on him might be fake. So they don't even know that. But the vast majority of them came, they're homegrown terrorists.
It's actually taken, I think, 48 or 56 hours. It's taken a long time for the media to actually get that sort of down.
Uh-huh.
That this was about Western European nations with people who have lived there, who had a citizenship or had a residency for their entire life, maybe traveled a little bit, and the putting the pieces together, though, I mean, that has to be emphasized.
So consider this. One of those French people, one of those Belgian people, could have hopped on a plane and come over here because they weren't on any list that we know of, and they didn't come from Syria. They came from France. They came from Belgium. Safe places. But you know what? It's not so safe, because hatred can grow any place. It's not just restricted to a particular country or a particular type of person. And the way to really make hatred grow is to treat people the way that we are treating people, the way we want to continue treating people. I mean, basically, you take immigrants and you lock them away into a ghetto or just a place where they don't have the same kind of rights that the rest of the citizens have. What do you think is going to happen if you just let that exist for generations? You're going to have a lot of resentful people who want to change things.
Cohabitating, making their individual wishes sort of a broader plan for that community. Is that integration? Is that the type of community it's also really important, I think, to have that gesture of goodwill, because we must consider how we appear,
mm-hmm.
In the face of this, and to be welcoming to a degree to in spite of this, I think, as Germany has done, and this is the example that because look, this isn't just a show. These people will create lives when they become naturalized, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and that is a network of people, and if they're treated with respect and dignity,
yes,
and brought into this culture in the face of all of this, that there is a really high chance they'll get get word back. I mean, it is a network of families, as you said. That, how does that play? I mean, if they are doing well, if they are treated and they find community and given an opportunity,
mm-hmm.
instead of discriminated against,
right.
like, before the doorstep, I think that goes a long way, because that's a lot of people who have family, who have connections to those places. That's the kind of goodwill we need to do, not installing governments or security forces. They, you know, protection is, that's a whole other issue.
Well, no, I was thinking about this when the refugees were being brought into Germany, when they were coming to Germany a few weeks ago, and just the reaction of the people there when they were welcoming them, saying, "You're safe now," giving them food, giving them shelter. These things resonate. These things are remembered for a long, long time. And I was asking myself, what kinds of citizens will these people become? Probably very, very good citizens, because they're being treated like human beings. They're being treated with respect. They're being welcomed. Now, French society, a lot of great things about French society, but it has not been that welcoming to certain communities. And there's a lot of discrimination. And especially amongst the Arab youth, and look at the unemployment figures there. You don't have to really look too far to realize this tremendous disparity. And that leads to all kinds of homegrown resentment and anger and desire to change things. No excuse for the kinds of horrors we saw. But if you want to build a healthy society, you need to integrate the people that are part of that society and welcome them and make them want to contribute, want to build things, want to become a part of it, feel like a part of it, feel like something that is them, that is their voice. If you have a large community of people that feel that the system does not represent them and that system needs to be replaced, you're kind of building the future, and a not very good future for yourselves. And that's what I've been seeing.
Yeah, it begets sort of a prophecy of evil. Mm-hmm. It's fulfilling exactly the kinds of characterizations, aspersions, negative impulse, and general attitude towards the U.S. It plays right into that hand.
Yeah,
and that's not who we need to be, and that is not who we are.
No, the Islamic communities within these countries should be very much a part of those countries, because they're a vital part, I think, of any culture. And in fact, in Belgium, I believe one of the parents of one of these guys actually went to the authorities saying, "Our son's been radicalized. We need help." And they didn't get the help they needed. It was missed.
Interesting.
But that is what happens when you have a community that feels they can communicate, that feels safe. They will say, "Yeah, there's a problem here." And good luck trying to find those problems without having connections like that. It's very important to basically include people as part of your society, not just allow them to live in a refugee camp or something like that, but basically have them be a vital part of your society. That's what our country was founded upon. I don't know at what point it changed where we said, "Okay, we're full, no more. You know, we don't need any more people of this particular type." That is what's making things so divisive and unhealthy, and that's why you're seeing a lot of resentment. And it doesn't have to be that way. We can easily defeat hatred and fundamentalism if we have people from all walks of life who support our basic structure. And we're missing some golden opportunities here. So, Governor Cuomo said some really cool things today. I hope to see our state be listed along with your state, Kyle, as welcoming refugees. And, even it's pitiful. The amount of refugees that Obama was talking about bringing in pales in comparison to Germany.
The beginning numbers they were working with, yeah.
And that's not even taking into account the size and population disparity between Germany and the United States. They had hundreds of thousands of refugees they were preparing for, and we were like, yeah, maybe 10,000 or something crazy like that. Considering our hands are kind of dirty from this whole mess, we shouldn't even be involved in the first place. We need to do a lot more.
The distribution numbers, I think, when they were talking about for in the EU, and when they were discussing, you know, who should bear the burden and that kind of thing, they basically, I think, were saying like 80,000 or 100,000 refugees for each country, and that was a lot of the kind of numbers that was being that were being opposed by
right.
places like Hungary and so on and so forth. So anyway, I mean, for 10,000, that's kind of a weak number for us to even start talking about. And again, that's a huge influence as far as being welcoming and.
Programming note, by the way, we have a basketball game coming up at 6:45.
Yes, we do.
Women basketball going to Hofstra, is that right? Okay, going to kick their ass. one of two games, actually, this year that will be on Tuesday night. So we're shortened tonight, but we'll be full length next week. So if you need to plug anything in, go right ahead. And what else? Well, this is pretty much all the news that's been taking place today. Or this week. We're seeing, and it's not over yet, obviously, because they're still trying to track down people responsible and look for other plots and things like that. And you're seeing
it's fragmenting a bit, yeah.
The usual overreaction and misstatements and other things like that.
Yeah, a lot of people trying to capitalize on it, but I think the consciousness out there, the really smart people. They kind of get it. They're seeing people that are seizing this as sort of an opportunity to push an agenda one way or another. Mm-hmm. I think the mass of people out there really do want, in a humanistic way, to find some real solutions to this stuff and bring some cohesion to the discussion amongst people of all kinds of communities. That's what we need. That's the kind of healing I think that it takes to get past this stuff.
It's not more complicated than that. It's basically just people getting together with other people. When this was going on in Paris, I saw so many amazing demonstrations of this. People literally opening their windows to those who were trying to escape in the theater to escape into their apartments. There was a hashtag for people who needed to get home. You tweet that hashtag and
Puerto Verta,
something like that, and you
no,
can.
That, I'm sorry, that's in Mexico.
Well, okay, whatever it is. The thing is, it was a way that social media was being used.
Uber, I think, is
and social media was used in many good ways, but it's also used in some misleading ways as well.
Yeah, because
There were reports of all people who had no relation whatsoever, old pictures being posted. You know, the usual misinformation. You have to vet these things. You have to make sure that what you're saying is factual, and there's a lot of panic that is brought out sometimes when things spread.
I think that was the strong feeling that we got when we were hearing that coverage, where a lot of even the announcers that were doing live coverage on Euronews, as you said,
mm-hmm.
just silence. You can't. You got to just kind of gather yourself, especially as journalists and stuff. You could sense that people were getting reports. There were, words being thrown around that you normally are like B horror movie phrases.
Right.
But it took a little bit of time. There was a bit of calm, a bit of quiet, where it was really just sit back and hear and feel out this reaction, this real kind of gasp around the world.
A collective breathing. Sort of, which we need to do. We need to stop. We need to breathe. We need to collect ourselves. We need to hold hands and realize that we're united because, this crap can't stand. It can't and it won't. We've seen it before. And the only way to defeat this kind of thing is individual courage and collective courage of normal people. You know, if you start changing who you are, and start judging people based on their religion, their looks, their background. You're doing exactly what the terrorists want you to do. Believe me, Daesh wants people to hate Muslims. That's what they want. If you can treat Syrian refugees badly and turn them into resentful people who hate the West, they've won. Daesh has won. Daesh being Islamic State. That's what we're calling them from now on. That's their name. Let's not refer to them. They don't deserve either word, Islamic or state. They don't.
Indeed.
What's interesting, though, and I always kind of look at the way the media presents things. And from the beginning, they were saying, this is ISIS. or whatever they decided to call them.
IS, ISIS, ISIL.
Nobody said Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda is known for coordinated attacks and
demonstrations,
for simultaneous explosions in cities. Why was nobody even considering that this could be them? We're very well trained because we've been told now these guys are the enemy. The other guys, well, they might be the enemy, but they're irrelevant right now. Let's focus on them. Before any claims were made, before any evidence was examined, we were saying it's these guys, not those guys. And I just thought it was amazing how easily we did that, how easily we just changed the word of the enemy, and that's how the dialogue works. It's that fascinates me how they're able to do that.
It is. It's predictive programming. I think we're sort of we are aware. We get, and it's part of the, I think, the 24-hour news cycle and internet, social media, that kind of stuff, being the responsiveness, the frequency of that news cycle. It allows people to jump to conclusions, and then the correction aspect, right? Oh, I can go back and I'm going to go ahead and just fix my article. All right, looks good. Uh-huh. That's careless. Yeah. And that is, I mean, there are ethics, there's things that come in there as with this media. And anyway, so to that end, I think that it is something we should be sensitive to going forward when we're covering these things, because it is easy to jump to conclusions, and it's never been cool. It's not cool now either, especially with these kind of events going on. So yeah, let's try to figure, do some research, investigate, let's report facts, but let's hear it out, investigate, let's figure things out,
look at things with a critical eye,
right.
Examine how things are being reported.
Yes.
You should never stop questioning things, questioning what you're told, especially in situations like this where things are fast breaking and not completely vetted. And just remember them. Remember how this particular thing unfolded. Remember what you were told. I remember
the framing.
9/11, so much misinformation was out there about things happening that never really happened. And it's educational to see how little things are checked out before they're reported as fact. And this continues for days afterwards, months afterwards sometimes. And the only way that we can actually challenge them is by paying attention and listening to them and basically sharing our common experience. So if you have things that you'd like to share with us, we can't take phone calls tonight. We'll try next week to do that. But write to us, please. We want to hear your comments.
Yes.
OTW@2600.com. OTW for off the wall at 2600.2600.com. We'd love to hear your viewpoints, your observations, your theories, your suggestions. It's extremely important, especially at times like this. And, where is it all going at this point? Obviously, it's not over. Obviously, this is not going to be the end. All kinds of horrible scenarios are being theorized about right now, both in this country and overseas. But, to me, I'm kind of surprised it's not happening a lot more often. If it was as bad as everybody fears, it's not really that complicated to blow things up if that's what you want to do. And fortunately, that doesn't happen very often. So it tells me that the situation might be a bit more hopeful than the folks at CNN and Fox want us to believe. There's no reason to really panic and live our lives in fear. What the people in Paris are doing is they're going outside, they're gathering, they're standing up to this kind of thing, and that's what I think we all have to do.
Yeah,
always.
Yeah, please share, talk to your neighbors, and write us, let us know observations, things you're seeing, the way people, how people are handling it, what kind of reactions maybe in your community are apparent that are out there. We'd love to hear about it.
Yes, yes. And by all means, talk to other people as well. Communicate with them. Reach out to people everywhere. And don't buy into the ignorance and hatred, because that's the first thing that comes down the pike and swallows a lot of people up. You think that you can deal with a situation by blaming a particular group of people or by acting in a forceful way. It's not. It's usually someone else's agenda. So just keep that in mind. And I guess we'll be back next week with a regular length program here at Off the Wall. But WUSB will continue with all kinds of other content, including a basketball game coming up next, and all kinds of other programming afterwards. So I guess the only appropriate way to leave tonight is something something that's the sound of Paris, I guess. What do you think? What do you think of that?
Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely appropriate. Apologies to whomever is trying to reach us over the phones. As we said, we're not taking calls. So
why are we apologizing? We said we weren't taking calls. They should be apologizing to us for calling us when we said we're not taking calls.
I don't know. We're apologetic types right now. I don't know. It's going. Anyway.
Here's Edith.
Until next time.
Des yeux qui font baisser les miens, un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche, voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, que ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, l'a juré pour la vie. Et dès que je l'aperçois, alors je sens dans moi mon cœur qui bat. Des nuits d'amour à plus finir, un grand bonheur qui prend sa place. Des ennuis, des chagrins s'effacent, heureux, heureux, à en mourir. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est toi pour moi, moi pour toi dans la vie. Tu me l'as dit, pas juré pour la vie. T'aperçois, alors je sens dans moi mon cœur qui bat.
Good evening. Well, good evening. Welcome to, this is WSB 90.1 FM radio, and tonight Stony Brook University is taking on the Hofstra Pride live at Hofstra University, and it's going to be another fun game. We're going to go to Cameron Boone and Jeff Bernstein live at Hofstra, and they'll take it from there.
Dale Henry, and welcome to the David S. Mack Sports and Exhibition Complex. And this is Stony Brook Seawolves women's basketball. And the Seawolves will be taking on the Hofstra Pride here in Uniondale in Nassau County. And Cameron, big game ahead for the Seawolves. Good that the Seawolves are playing the Hofstra Pride again. It's been a while, and good atmosphere here back in Nassau County.
Oh, well, like I brought up on Friday night, I'm not from Long Island. I'm from Rochester. I will fully disclose that. But I always enjoy, especially in college basketball, when these teams play these territorial battles. There's always a little extra intensity going on in these non-conference, in these rivalry matchups. And this one will certainly be no different. Both of these teams coming off of close victories in their season openers. So hopefully we will see the same type of game here tonight in Uniondale.
Well, Cameron, you had an opportunity to speak to the head coach of the Stony Brook Seawolves, Caroline McCombs, and let's hear from her.
We are talking with head women's basketball coach Caroline McCombs. And coach, obviously a gutted performance on Friday night. What do you want your team to take forward from that game and put into tonight?
Yeah, you just have to persevere no matter what the score is. And I thought that we did a really good job. We went on some runs. They went on some runs. And we really stayed together through all of those times, and they stayed focused on the task at hand. And so coming in here, you know, with our first road game, obviously a different environment. We had a great home court advantage on Friday night. But again, just staying together possession by possession.
And then this is the first time you guys are playing Hofstra in 5 years. How nice is it just that these two programs are renewing this Long Island rivalry?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I've played Hofstra before at some other universities that I've coached, but having had the opportunity to be here in Long Island and really renew this rivalry, I think it's an exciting time for both programs.
And then, obviously, the three freshmen that you guys brought in this year, obviously a big part of this team. How do you think they're going to be just nerve-wise being on their first road game and being in a different environment?
You don't know what you don't know. I just told them, hey, you can go out in the gym and shoot, okay? We didn't know what time we were going to get here, how early. We wanted to make sure we got here in time. So we have a little bit of extra time today. But what's nice about that is, you know, when you haven't shot around on an opposing gym's hoops before, it's just nice. They have a, you know, very wide open background here for those shooters. You know, you just never know what's going to happen. They didn't shoot good the other night, but we didn't either. So hopefully, you know, maybe we'll see a little different type of basketball game with the 3-point percentages increasing tonight.
All right, thank you very much, Coach. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. That was the head coach of the Stony Brook Seawolves, Caroline McCombs, and still early in the season where you are developing and getting ready for America East play, Cameron, but an opportunity to play a very, very good team that won 20 games today, team that's predicted to potentially go to the postseason in Hofstra. So a big test ahead, Cameron.
A very big test ahead, and I think we were talking about Iona on Friday night, how they had a big girl in the middle. Hofstra's got the same one. Ashina Durant, just a giant player last season for this team. She won Rookie of the Week 7 times. She was an All-MAC Rookie of the Year. And coming in for her sophomore season, and she came out and did exactly what she did last season, or last game, 17 points, 13 rebounds. Again, another rebounding foe that Stony Brook is going to have to box out here in this game. Another key for the Seawolves tonight. And we saw Brittany Snow do a great job boxing out and getting rebounds on Friday night, and I think she's going to have to lead the charge again for this Seawolves team if they're going to come to Hofstra and get a win.
Absolutely, Cameron, and it should be a really a really big game for the Seawolves and the university. That Stony Brook playing Hofstra again. Football will be playing Albany, which is always a big rival, but to play Hofstra on Long Island, and all sports are going to be playing Hofstra pretty much in the near future. It's good to play your rival, especially when there's two Division One teams on Long Island. It's always good to battle in every sport.
Well, and like I said in the open, you bring about these territorial advantages. You know, there's always the, well, who rules Long Island? Is it Stony Brook? Is it Hofstra? Both of the teams, especially on the men's side, a little bit have struggled. The men's team hasn't won a basketball conference championship since 2001. We know the Stony Brook men haven't won in a while, so they've both been struggling. But these games always bring out the best in each other in an early non-conference test. Both of these teams get an advantage out of it by playing this, and I think it should be another very good contest. What are some of your favorite memories of a Stony Brook Hofstra game? Like I said, you've been on Long Island a little longer than I have.
Well, the Stony Brook Hofstra rivalry goes back a long way. I mean, even last year's men's game was a great game that went right down to the wire. Football had some big games, lacrosse, big rivalries there. You know, every Hofstra game has been a game that has been very, very competitive. In the beginning, it was all Hofstra because they were in Division One for longer than Stony Brook. But as the years progressed, Stony Brook made it a lot more competitive, started to win some games. And now, you know, I think it's at the point where it's either considered at the same level. And some sports, I think Stony Brook's better. Some sports, Hofstra's better. And, depending on how it goes. But I think the programs are pretty much on the same level in terms of, you know, we've caught up. And so, like I said, some sports we've gone ahead, but we have caught up. And good to see them playing. And, you know, personally, I would like to see both teams in the same conference one day. That would be, like, extra special. You know, to play a conference game only 40 minutes away would be super, and then build that rivalry.
And then you're playing twice a year if you're in the conference.
Right. So that would be great, but take it as baby steps. At least we're playing non-conference and everything, and the rivalry builds. And I know it's going to get better. I'm not going to get into details. I know it's going to get better, especially in basketball next year with some different things going to happen. But that will be fun. It will be really fun as the years progress. I'm glad it's back. And it should be very, very interesting. We're going to send it back to the WUSB studios for about 30 seconds. JL Henry is going to give us some updates and some scores about games going around in the world of sports. You're listening to the longtime home of Seawolves Women's Basketball, WUSB.
Hi, my name is Giles Henry, and you're listening to WSB Women's Basketball Coverage, and we're not going to start with our regular New York sports news. We're going to take it international. 4 days after the tragedy that happened in Paris, the French national soccer team took the field again at Wembley Stadium in England, and it was a really emotional scene. The France national team did lose to England in a 2-0 friendly, but to this game was more about fighting against terrorism and showing that we were resilient more than just the actual game. This was one of the moments where sports actually went beyond just what was happening on the field. And this is why so many of us love sports. There was a lot of other international friendlies happening around the world. Most notably, you had Portugal with a 2-0 win, and you had Switzerland beating Austria 2-1. And just to get through a few more scores. There was another international friendly that got postponed. Germany was taking on Netherlands, but a bomb threat stopped that game. And it just took you back to what happened in Paris 4 days ago. And what actually happened was... Ambulance was The truck was filled with explosives parked outside the stadium, and somebody disguised it as an ambulance. And authorities in Germany, they stopped. Authorities in Germany, they stopped anything before it happened, thankfully. But it just takes you back to what kind of world that we live in, and it brings you to all these different moments where sports. Why we all love sports and why it can translate to so many things. When we 4 days ago, you saw what happened in Germany and you saw what happened in Paris. And then today you saw how two teams put everything aside, put everything that they're playing against each other, that they're competing against each other. And they put all that aside for the greater good. And it's just a beautiful thing to see. You're still listening to WSB, the longtime partner with Stony Brook Athletics, the longtime home of Seawolves Sports, and wow, New York Giants lost another heartbreaking game this past Sunday, but you have your other New York teams coming in today, New York Knicks, might be another heartbreaking loss, but you'll never know with the Knicks. And talking about teams that are really bad, what about the Brooklyn Nets? Wow. So, let's get into a few more sports. So, we talked about what was happening in the world of football. We talked about what happened in Paris. And the Stony Brook men's basketball team, they got their first W of the season against the United States Marine Merchant Academy. And guys, it was a tough one to watch. Stony Brook men's basketball team defeated the USMMA 103-32. And everybody had juiced up stats that game, but after a while, it was just really hard to watch. The reserves came in for the Seawolves, and it still didn't help USMMA get back into the game. And some notable players that I think stood out that entire game. One of those guys is, of course, Jameel Warney. And two other players that I think stood out the most. Lucas Woodhouse and Ahmad Walker. But we're going to get back into that, but I'm going to send it back to Cam and Jeff at Hofstra.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Back here at Hofstra University. We're getting ready for the national anthem here at Hofstra University. We're sending it to the public address announcer at the Hofstra Prize.
Ladies and gentlemen, we ask you to join us on America and go to Brooklyn with the singing of our national anthem.
Bye.
Back here at Hofstra University, it's the Seawolves taking on the Hofstra Pride. Here at Hofstra University. And some final thoughts, Cameron, before we get to the starting line.
I'm really going to be interested not to single anybody out, but everybody in this starting lineup played very well on Friday night. Sky D'Amelio, Bane Walker, Snow, and Anya Galigbo. The one person I'm going to be looking out for is Jarrell Matthews. Over 3 from 3-point range, just a pure shooter from the outside. And she struggled a little bit, whether it was freshman jitters, whether it was, you know, whatever it was. You heard Coach McCombs talk about it in the pregame interview. This is a shooter's gym, you know. So I think Matthews could have the potential to get hot tonight and not make up for a bad performance, but really put her stamp on her freshman campaign in her second game.
Let's look at the starting lineups for tonight's game. For the Hofstra Pride, the head coach is Krista Coburn-Stavetsky. The associate head coach is Faisal Khan. Assistant coach Denise King, Michael Gibson. And the trainer is David Revere. Number 0, Kelly Loftus from Alexandria, Virginia. Number 2, Ashenay Durant, the sophomore from Newark, New Jersey. Number 11, Crystal Luciano, the junior from San Juan, Puerto Rico. Number 12, Darius Fork, the senior from Hempstead, New York. Number 20, Angie White, the redshirt junior from Newark, Delaware. She's also a forward. And that is the starting five for the Hofstra Pride. For the Stony Brook Seawolves, the head coach is Caroline McCombs. The assistants are Chanel Harris, Adam Cole, and Kelly Rotan. For the Seawolves, a 5'9 junior from Orangeburg, New York, number 4, Krista Scott-Emilio. 5'5 junior from Rochester, New York, number 5, Corey Bain Walker. 5'9 freshman from Chicago, Illinois, out of Marion Catholic, number 11, Jarrell Matthews. 6 foot senior from Chemung, New Jersey, out of Seneca High School, number 20, Brittany Snow. And a 6 foot freshman from Miami, Florida, out of Miami County Day, number 22, Ogechi Anagaligbo. So the Seawolves wearing the red today, the full red. The brand new uniforms trimmed in a red and blue numbers, white Stony Brook in front. Hofstra coming out with the white uniforms, tops and bottoms, trimmed in blue and gold. So the Seawolves going with the same lineup tonight, Tommy.
Same lineup, and I think they took ideas from the Bills for their color rush jerseys, going red and red tonight. But no, these are the new jerseys the women are going to be wearing this year. They look very sharp. But final thoughts here, just looking forward to getting back to Stony Brook and Hofstra, always a nice Long Island rivalry. The first time they're going to meet in 5 years. Again, I'm going to look on Stony Brook's side. I'm looking for Matthews. Can she get hot? Can she get going on the outside to kind of stretch this Hofstra defense? On the other side, the Hofstra offense, Ashenay Durant. Can she duplicate her season opening performance of 17 points and 13 rebounds? It's going to be interesting tonight against a workhorse in Brittany Snow.
So the Seawolves and Hofstra reviving the rivalry. And hopefully Stony Brook and Hofstra women's basketball continue to play every year. The men will be playing in December, so that should be a good game. We'll have a Sunday afternoon with Hofstra, and that'll be interesting. And here we are. The tip is won by the Hofstra Pride. They will go from right to left on your radio dial. Seawolves are in the patented man-to-man. Up top is Fork. Fork on the left side to Durant. Durant, three-pointer is good.
Durant just kind of left it off to there for Loftus, and Loftus pulled up from long range, something Stony Brook's going to have to be wary of.
3-0, the Hofstra Pride lead. Scott-Emilio up top with the right hand. Now on the left side, it's Matthews. 9:25 remaining first quarter. Remember, quarters this year for women's basketball. A major change. Bane Walker on the left side. 5 on the shot clock. Puts up the scoop shot, and the layup is good. And Hofstra leads 3-2. Over on the left side, Luciano on the baseline. One-hand pass. Three-point shot is good by Loftus. She's 2-for-2 from three-point range.
Ready first shooters, Jim. Kelly Loftus. 2 shots, 2 makes so far from deep.
6-2 Hofstra. 8:53 remaining first quarter. Bane Walker off the high screen, over to Matthews. Matthews back up top to the senior, Brittany Snow. And he was not on the same page. Scannamiglia went towards the baseline, and the pass went over the sideline. So a turnover for Stony Brook.
Yeah, Scannamiglia tried a back cut on her defender, and Snow did not see it coming, just kind of threw it right into the bleachers.
You're listening to 90.1 FM WUSB, the longtime home of SeaWorld Sports. Three-point shot is no good by four, and here comes Stony Brook in transition. Scannamiglia over to Matthews for the layup, and good!
Football pass there. Corey Bain Walker hitting Scannamiglia in stride. Scott keeps her head up, finds Matthews perfectly in transition, and she lays it in easily.
Battle of Long Island here in Hofstra. 6-4, the Pride lead. On the right side is Fork. They look inside. It's blocked by Arnold Lugbo. Hofstra picks up the offensive rebound. The layup coast to coast is good by Fork in the half court. On the left side. And it's now 8-4 Pride. They walk a bounce pass to Arnold Lugbo at the left elbow to the cutting Scannamiglia. Pride in the man-to-man and a foul called against Stony Brook. It's an offensive foul on the perimeter.
Anya Galigba is setting a screen there for Scannamiglia on her left side, and I think she kind of stuck out her elbow a little bit and moved, and when you're setting a screen, you got to stay set, and she was an offensive foul.
90.1 FM, the home of Stony Brook women's basketball in 2015-16. Luciano on the right side. Back up top to left. It's 17 on the shot clock at the 7:37 mark. He was still in the man-to-man. On the left elbow is White. White, foul line, jump shot. No good. Scramble for the rebound. Offensive rebound by Durant. Back up top left. It's another three. In and out. No good. And Snow comes down with the rebound for the Seawolves.
Great hustle there by Brittany Snow. She had to go out, try to contest, and then run back in. Got in front of Durant and was able to pull down the board.
Bay Walker drives the lane and draws the foul. Looks like she's a little bit hurt, but gets up. Brittany Snow brings her up. Snow will go to the... No, it's not a shooting foul. So the Seawolves will take over on the baseline at the 7:14 mark of the first quarter.
Looked like a shooting foul, but she was kind of bumped, I guess, before she went up there. And good job by Bain Walker doing what she does best. Gets in the paint, drawing a foul.
Scannamiglia on the baseline over to the cutting Snow. Now she's on the baseline on the right side. Powers her way in. Backs in. Looks inside for Arnold Lugbo for the layup. So the freshman cuts the Hofstra lead to 8-6.
That pass went out of 2 feet. Great placement there by Snow to Anya Galigbo, getting it on her favorite left-hand side.
6:56 remaining first quarter here in Nassau County. Battle of Long Island. They lob it inside to White. It is out of bounds. Good defense by the Seawolves to deny White of picking up that ball in the low post.
Anya Galigbo has been very active defensively here early, batting the entry pass earlier, and now there, coming up with good pressure on the inside against White and is able to force the turnover.
6:40 remaining here in the first quarter. 8-6 to Pride. Anya Galigbo up top over to the cutting Scannamiglia. Right-hand dribble. Matthews, the freshman, back up top to the senior, Brittany Snow. Snow hands off to Bay Walker, fakes the three in the corner, 10 on the shot clock. Drives the baseline. Skips it over to Scannamiglia, right corner three. In and out, no good. Snow offensive rebound, puts it up, she fouls, 10 hits. So good job by Brittany Snow. She'll go to the free throw line for one.
What were you calling Brittany Snow all night on Friday night? A workhorse.
The warrior.
Well, she did both. Where she was able to run around the girl who was boxing her out. She got the rebound and then a weird spin as she got hit and won.
Free throws up and good. So a 3-point play for the Seawolves to take the first lead of the game. 9-8. Seawolves shooting 80% from the field. Hofstra just as good. 50% 3-of-6. So good brand of basketball here in the Battle of Long Island. 15-foot jump shot is good by Fork on the left side. Gives Hofstra the lead again, 10-9. 6 minutes remaining first quarter. Listening to Stony Brook Women's Basketball, 90.1 FM WUSB. Matthews the long three, and hit! Big shot there by the freshman, and Stony Brook leads 12-10. Hofstra in transition. Raptors tries to save it, she does. Over to Fork, on the right side is Luciano. And the Pride reset. Luciano on the right side, back up top to Fork. Fork over to Durant on the left elbow. 10 on the shot clock. Fork, back up top, 3-point shot. No good by Luciano and rebounded by Snow.
Hofstra not afraid to take threes early. 5 of their first 8 shot attempts have been from long range.
Matthews comes off the screen over to Snow. Seawolves lead 12-10, their largest of the game. And Scannamiglia called for the offensive foul. Driving the lane little push-off party elbow on Scannamiglio. That's a turnover for the Seawolves.
Yeah, Scannamiglio drove right there and kind of used her elbow, as you said, kind of extended it a little too far. Sent Loftus flying backwards a little bit and got called for the offensive foul.
Davion Wingate comes in for the Seawolves, the freshman from Atlanta, Georgia, out of Stevenson High School. And Corey Bain Walker comes out for Stony Brook. We'll talk about some more substitutions for Hofstra. 5 minutes remaining, first quarter, 12-10 Seawolves. Good start for the Seawolves. Inside, the layup is good by Durant. And the game is tied at 12.
Pick and roll action there. Luciano to Durant, perfectly executed on a nice pocket pass.
Scannamiglio up top, cutting to the cutting Snow. Snow, one dribble. Back over to Wingate. Wingate is over to Onigaligno for the easy layup. And Stony Brook retakes the lead 14-12.
Freshman composure out on the outside. Jerome Matthews was on the left wing open. The defender started darting at her. Wingate fakes the pass there, dumps it down for the easy layup.
4:23 remaining first quarter. Three-point shot by Jackson is no good. And offensive rebound by Durant.
Nobody communicated for Stony Brook. Three red jerseys running for the ball.
In the low post, Durant. Durant skips it in the corner. Another three by Epps.